Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast. This is episode number 249, dedicated to a man who on June 13th, 2012, pitched the first perfect game in San Francisco Giants history, Mr. Matt Cain. And as always, thank you for listening and downloading another episode of the podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by Mr. Don Fisher. He is the voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. I was born in the great state of Indiana. I have listened to numerous IU football and basketball games on the radio, and Don Fisher has been on the call of every single one. Don Fisher, he's been at this school, been at Indiana for almost 50 years. He has been a person that has been able to witness numerous coaches, been able to witness numerous All-Americans. He has been a person that has been on the call of some bad football teams and been able to call some national championship wins as well. He has so many stories. He has so many things to talk about. We could not fit all of them in this space we had in our interview together. Don Fisher is amazing. We discussed some things about what happened and how he knew he wanted to be a sportscaster, and how he got into sports casting, how he got the Indiana job, his first encounter with Bob Knight. You also recognize the coach that was at Indiana, the football coach who was at it in his first year, when Don Fisher was in his first year at Indiana as well. Let's go ahead, I'm going to back away, and let's bring in Don Fisher as we take a trip to the state of Indiana to enjoy my fun conversation with the longtime voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, Mr. Don Fisher. And joining us now here on the Jay Stevens Podcast, it's the longtime voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, both basketball and football. It's Don Fisher. Don, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jay. I look forward to it.
Yes, sir. And I look forward to talking to you. Like I told you when we talked briefly last week, you are the father of my former high school football coach, and also he coached, your son did, coached me in shot put and in discus. So it's nice that not only are you the voice that I heard calling IU football and basketball games, but also you're the father of one of my former coaches. So there's a couple things there that we have a couple ties together.
You know what that means? That means I'm really old.
Oh, man. Don Fisher's hat. I'm happy to have you on here. And you have been the long-time voice. I say long time. I believe you started calling games for IU back in 1973, 73 and 74. That's a long time to be at one spot. When did you realize you wanted to have a career in play-by-play broadcasting?
Well, literally, I got out of high school and had no clue what I wanted to do because I was not a real good student. I didn't care a lot about school. I pretty much worked just about hard enough to get by, make C's, and make sure that my parents weren't yelling at me all the time. So literally, I got out of high school and didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought about college a little bit. I played a lot of sports in high school and that kind of thing. I was just a very average player. Nevertheless, I really loved sports and loved everything about athletics and learned a lot of lessons from it. None of them carried over to the academic side for me, but nevertheless, I really enjoyed athletics. But you get out of high school and you don't have any plans to go to college, you're pretty much not going to be involved in sports anymore other than intramural type stuff or town teams and things like that, which is some of the things that I did after high school. And got a job, went to work, and got four or five other jobs for a while there because I didn't like anything that I was doing for the first 3 or 4 months, and I'd quit and go to something else. So I was kind of a vagabond from a work perspective at that point. And finally, I hung my shield, so to speak, on a job with the railroad. Went to work at a railroad depot, and they told me when I was hired, because I was going to make more money at this job than I had made at any of my previous positions. And so they basically said, we're going to have you work 7 days a week until we hire a new weekend guy. We should have one in 2 or 3 weeks. 7 months later, they finally found it. So I worked 7 months for a shift of 9 to 6 in the morning, 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. was my shift at this railroad depot. Did all kinds of different things, unloaded a lot of mail from freight cars and things like that, and put them on carts to have picked up by local guys that delivered mail to the post offices and things like that in the smaller towns around where we lived. And bills of lading and all kinds of things like that. Well, during that seven-month period of time, I'm thinking, I can't do this for the rest of my life. I'm not going to work every day of the week, 9 to 6, that kind of thing, and basically sleep during the day and not have much of a social life, obviously. So at any rate, about halfway through this seven-month period, I ended up getting a sport magazine one night, and I'm reading it during my lunch break around 1:30 in the morning, and I'm seeing this ad on the back inside cover of Sport Magazine, and it said, how would you like to be a sportscaster? And literally, it struck a chord with me. I looked into it a little further, and the advertisement was for a home correspondence course to a place called Career Academy in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I got my lessons on record albums. They sent me 20 record albums with my lessons on them. They sent me a workbook and a tape recorder. And that's how I got started in this business. And I went through all the machinations that they wanted me to go through in regard to getting started in the business, and ended up going to the local radio station shortly after I started the correspondence course. We had one radio station in our town. It was an FM station, and I went up to them, and basically I asked the program director if I could just come and observe and see what they do and get a feel for the radio business itself. And told them I wanted to get into sportscasting, but as you know, in small town radio, you get into radio first. You do whatever they ask you to do. Mm-hmm. But I was essentially a gopher for these guys for 3 or 4 months while I was taking this home correspondence course. And I met a guy named Chuck Kenworthy who wanted to get into TV, and he was one of their DJs during the day. And shortly after about this three-month period, I'm about a third of the way through my correspondence course, this guy leaves. Kenworthy leaves the position. I can't get the position because I don't have enough experience yet, and if I did get the position, I was going to screw it up. So there was no way I was going to get started that way. But anyway, Chuck leaves, and I continue my correspondence course. I'm about halfway through it now, and I called up to where he had gone in DeKalb, Illinois. I said, could I speak to Chuck Kenworthy? And they said, he's not here. And I said, what do you mean he's not there? They said, he's left. And I said, well, where'd he go? And they said, he went to Butte, Montana. I said, what? Why did he go there? He says, well, he wants to get into TV, and he's going to a radio TV operation as a radio guy, but he thinks he'll be able to move into television in a year's time. I said, well, give me a phone number, and he did, and they did. And so I called him up shortly after that, and I said, I can't believe you left DeKalb. He says, well, I want to get into television, and this was the only job I could find that had a TV scenario that I probably could move into. And I said, well, I understand that. And we were ready to hang up after our conversation, and he said, look, incidentally, they're looking for a nighttime DJ out here. It's not a full-time DJ job. I'll tell you more about that later on. But anyway, he said, they're looking for somebody to fill the position. I said, well, I don't have any experience on the air at this point. And he goes, I know that, he says, but trust me, you might want to be send them a tape or a resume and just let them hear what you sound like and that kind of thing. And you never know. And so I did. And literally about 3 weeks later, I get a phone call from the general manager of this radio TV operation. And he says, we think we'd like to interview you. So I got on a train. I'm in Mendota, Illinois. I got on a train because I could ride it free. And I went on this train ride all the way to Butte, Montana, and interviewed for the job. And came back home thinking there's no chance I'm going to get this position, and I got it. Somehow, they decided I got it. And the reason they decided that was simple. My position was 9 at night till 6 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
9 o'clock to midnight, I was a DJ. From midnight to 3 a.m., I was a janitor, cleaning up the messes in the offices there and emptying garbage cans and cleaning toilets and all those kinds of things. And from 3 to 6, I was the morning, with lack of better terminology, the agribusiness director. And talking about things that I didn't even know anything about. So at any rate, I got the job, about 15 months later, I left it. I wanted to get into sports. I had gone with the local sports guys there for a few ball games and did stats for them and that kind of thing. And it just kind of piqued my interest even more in the sportscasting end of it. And in Montana at that time, and this is back in 1968, 69, someplace in there, literally there weren't very many radio stations in Montana, so there were very few opportunities to find anything that would even be open, much less somebody that was least experienced as I was, and especially from the standpoint that I'd never had any play-by-play experience. So I went back to Mendota, Illinois, where I'd come from, and literally, I went back to work for the railroad, if you can believe that. They still hadn't found anybody to take my place 15 months after I'd left, which tells you what kind of job it was.
Yeah.
And at any rate, long story short, I'm there for a very short time. I find out that there's a job in Otto, Illinois, about 30 miles from Mendota. And I applied for it, got the job, because when I went for the interview, the general manager of the radio station said, well, how much play-by-play experience do you have? And I said, well, I did the backup games in Butte, Montana. So how did I say that? Because I lied about it, for heaven's sake. I literally told the guy that I had experience doing play-by-play in Butte, Montana, and he asked me for a tape, which tells you all you need to know in this sense, because this guy didn't press me on the fact that I didn't have a tape of play-by-play. He did not press me.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And I said, well, I did a lot of the backup games in Butte, Montana. I said, they really didn't tape those. Well, how did they get backup games? Think about it. Anyway, the guy hires me. So I get the job. I do my first game about a month and a half after I'm there. And, of course, in small-town radio, you're a disc jockey, you're a newsman, you're a salesman. You do a little bit of everything in production and all those kinds of things. I do my first ball game a month and a half later, and it was the worst play-by-play broadcast in the history of broadcasting. And I say that, and I really believe it and know it, because I was horrific. I really literally knew at the end of my broadcast that night that I probably was going to be fired the next day. Well, I waited for about, in those days, this FM station that I worked for did not sign off. They signed off the air. They weren't 24 hours. They signed off the air about 10 o'clock at night after football was over with. I waited till 11 o'clock to take the equipment that I had for the broadcast back to the radio station, figuring nobody would be there. When I drove in the parking lot, I see the light is on in the offices, and there's the silhouette of the general manager standing in the door waiting for me.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, there's no chance I'm going to survive this. I'm going to be out of here. So I walk in with the equipment in my hand. The guy goes, I thought you told me you'd done play-by-play before. I said, well, Mr. Porso, if I would have told you that I had no play-by-play experience, I didn't think that you would hire me. And he goes, no shit. Oh, excuse my language.
You're fine.
At any rate, he says, you've got 3 weeks. I said, what? He says, you've got 3 weeks. In other words, you've got 3 more weeks, 3 more ball games, and you better be dramatically better in that 3 week period of time or you're gone. So I went home counting my lucky stars, and I thought, how am I going to get better in 3 weeks' time? The next day I got up, I called a guy named Art Kimball, who was a local play by play guy that was doing play by play while I was playing high school ball there. I played in Rochelle and Mendota both. But he was 15 minutes away in LaSalle, Peru, Illinois. It was a bigger school that he was broadcasting for. And I called him up and I said, Mr. Kimball, you don't know me. My name's Don Fisher. I'm from Mendota. I'm working in Otto, Illinois. I did my first play by play last night. And I was horrific, and I said, I need some help, some direction to kind of give me an insight into what I need to do, how I prepare, and that kind of thing. He said, well, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, I'm going to church. He said, what are you doing after church? I said, whatever you want me to. And so I went to his home, sat down with him. He spent 5 hours with me that day. And it was unbelievable, the stuff that he taught me, because the stuff that he taught me is what I have been using my entire career since that time, and it's led me to where I'm at now. So, at any rate, that's how I got started in this business.
What kind of things did he teach you? I'm going to go somewhere else later on, but what kind of things did he teach you that that you learned back at that time that you still carry with you today as you're calling games on a regular basis?
Well, he said the first thing you need to do is you need to find out about your team. You need to find out, you got to find out more about them just than just the roster itself. You've got to go in there and talk to the coaches, find out what they're telling you about their ball club, find out who are the stars, who are the guys that they count on the most, that kind of thing. He said, then from a preparation standpoint to do the broadcast, you got to set yourself up with a spotting chart, especially in football. You've got to be able to do statistics on your own because you're not going to have, as we have now, stat monitors and things like that. And we had nobody in those days that did statistics. You literally had to do most of them yourself, unless you were fortunate enough to be able to have somebody tag along with you and want to do statistics for you. And we didn't have any spotters at that time either. So I had to make up a system, and Art Kimble didn't have a spotter either. So he basically made up a numerical system that he put the roster down in a numerical form so he could read it easily and pick out numbers easily and know where he was going on his chart. And it was that kind of preparation that he taught me. And lo and behold, three weeks later, I still had a job. I mean, I improved pretty dramatically in a very short period of time just because I actually prepared to do the broadcast. Because they didn't teach you that in correspondence school. In fact, they didn't teach you anything about sports, period. I just always thought I could do it because I knew the games. You know, I knew football, I knew basketball, I knew baseball. Those are all sports that I played. And so the stuff that he told me was just common sense type stuff. And learn how to pronounce people's names. Make sure you don't pronounce people's names wrong. Inflect your voice better. Because I let him listen to the game that I'd done, and he goes, yeah. He says, that was close to being the worst I've ever heard.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, but I wanted that kind of critique, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, here's the biggest thing. He said, listen to every single game that you do. In other words, have it taped, and then you go back and listen to it, and you pick out what you like and pick out what you don't like, and that's how you get better. And he said, if you think you're doing something wrong or you're using the same word too much or you're not being objective with your calls, he said, all those things are going to come out when you listen to the tape. And if you're not your own worst critic, he said, you're going to be in trouble because you've got to be the guy that thinks he's good, but you're willing to say, you know what, I just screwed that up, or that sounded bad, or that's not the way you inflect your voice, whatever the case may be. And I got better very quickly. I can only tell you what he told me was absolute gold.
You know, Don, we had Matt Taylor, voice of the Colts, on the podcast earlier this year, and he told me, he talked about how he will go back and listen to every single broadcast, everyone, and he's doing games weekly like you are, and so he's taking the time to not just go back and listen, but critique himself, be his own toughest critic, and then also use those things that he messed up on and use those to fuel him to get better in every broadcast. And so it's interesting how in your early stages of learning, you did that, and you learned about listening to yourself and figuring out where you messed up and fixing those issues. Well, even today in 2022, there's someone here in Indianapolis in the area, Matt Taylor, that's doing that very thing. And I have listened to him numerous times. I've listened to you numerous times. I can tell how you guys get better from one game to the next.
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy if you do it the right way and you are your own self-critic. I mean, you've got to be willing to criticize yourself, and you know what sounds good and you don't. And here's the other thing about sportscasting. There isn't anything new in this business about sportscasting. There may be a phrase or two or a word or two that somebody uses that's a little bit different. But if you haven't stolen from every other broadcaster you've ever listened to, you're not paying attention. I mean, and you learn from what you listen to. The guys that I grew up listening to were Harry Carey for the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team back in the day before he went to Chicago and became an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And then a guy like Dan Kelly, who did the St. Louis Blues, and I don't know a thing about hockey, but the St. Louis Blues as a hockey team that Dan Kelly broadcast for, I learned as much about inflection as anybody I've ever listened to from that guy, from Dan Kelly. He was phenomenal, and he used his voice. He got he got very excited about plays, but he never got carried away with that excitement, if you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's such a critical thing to be able to make the game exciting, but not to get to the point where you just absolutely, you know, you're just screeching, so to speak. That's called inflection, using your voice properly. And nobody taught you this. You basically are self-taught to do it, because you can hear it in your own voice. When you do play-by-play and you go back and listen to it, and you go, oh, my gosh, I thought that would really sound good, and it stinks, you know. So you have to be willing to be a critic of your own work, and that's just how you get better. And Matt Taylor is a friend of mine, and we've been close for a long time now, and one of those people I really respect just because he works at it. He wants to be good at what he is, at his craft. And that's pretty much, if you're motivated to do that in this business, you're going to be successful.
How did you get the job at Indiana?
Well, this is a strange story too that brings into the first part of the story. But I was in Terre Haute, Indiana for 2.5 years, from 1970 summer of 1970 to November, the end of November in 1972. The radio station was sold in midsummer in 72 that I worked for, WBOW in Terre Haute. It was sold, and I literally had no job after the football season ended. They wanted me to stay on as a disc jockey and do one game a week, and I didn't want to do that. When I got there, they let me develop a sports program that we did about 275 play-by-play broadcasts a year. I did everything. I did football, basketball, baseball at both high school and college levels, along with junior football occasionally. And we also did Little League, and we did the Babe Ruth. We did Babe Ruth's baseball there. We just did everything. We did Terre Haute Action Track, which was a dirt kind of velodrome-type place. Basically, they'd run dirt sprint cars down at the county fairgrounds in Terre Haute. We did those races. I did so many different things. I did softball games occasionally. That's how much play-by-play we were allowed to do, because I always felt like the more play-by-play that's how you get better. And it truly was. So at any rate, I'm in Terre Haute. My job ends at the end of football season in 1972. And I didn't want to be without play-by-play experience for the next winter. You know, everybody's got their sports guy for the winter time at that point. There are very few sports casting jobs to be had at small-town radio stations. So I literally called up the program director or the general manager at WOLI in Ottawa, Illinois, where I'd come from at one point. And it was a different general manager. And the general manager now was a guy named Jim Frandon, who was the program director when I was there. And I said, Jim, I don't know if you've got anything. He said, but I'm going to be without a job this winter unless I can find something real quickly. And I said, I don't know if you know of anybody or anything or any other stations up in northern Illinois if there's a possibility of a job opening. And he said, the only job opening I know about is the one we have here. He said, we've actually got a high school kid doing our play-by-play, and he's not bad, but he needs a lot of work. And he needs somebody to kind of be a mentor to him. And he said, you can come back and do the play-by-play for us and let him do some of it as well. And he said, if you'll sell for me, along with doing some of the play-by-play, he says, I've got a job for you. So I went back to Ottawa, Illinois. I got done with that. I was in the spring of the next year, in the spring of 73. I'm looking around for different jobs. I've applied for a job in Eugene, Oregon as the voice of the Oregon Ducks. I've applied for a job at Illinois State as the voice of the Redbirds at that time. I'd had a couple of other high school jobs that I'd looked into. And I get a call from the old general manager at WBOW in Terre Haute one day, and he says, have you found anything yet for your new football and basketball season? I said, not really. I said, there's a couple of jobs I'm interviewing for. I think I'm going to probably get a chance to be the voice of the Redbirds in Bloomington, Illinois. And he says, well, you know that the Indiana University job is open. They're going to have an exclusive play-by-play network for the first time in the school's history, and they're looking for a guy to be the play-by-play guy. And I said, I didn't know it was open. He goes, yeah, it was in broadcasting. I said, well, it must have been one of those private boxes because I never saw it. And he goes, well, I know the general manager there. He says, this job's been open for about a month and a half. I thought you probably had applied for it. He says, I'll call the general manager and see if there's still an opportunity to send a tape and a resume. So he called me back a couple hours later, and he said, yeah, the guy will take your he'll take your tape and resume, he says, but you're only about one of 275 guys that have applied for this job. And he says, I don't know what your chances are with that kind of output, or, you know, that kind of numbers in dealing with it. He says, but I'll give you a chance, or at least they're going to give you a chance. And he said, send a tape and a resume immediately. So I did. And like 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from a guy named Bill Robinson, who was a program director at WIRE in Indianapolis. And the radio station was looking for a sports director, and they were looking for a guy to do play-by-play for Indiana University. I applied for it. I was one of five guys that they interviewed, and believe it or not, they called me about 3 weeks later and said, you're the guy.
Wow. Wow. And you're there. You got the job. And I'm looking this up right now. Bob Knight was already there. He got there a couple years prior to you, and so you're getting there. And I don't know what the early days like for Bob Knight, but I know that with you being the play-by-play man, you're, I know nowadays how it is, how you interview and you have a relationship and discussing things, maybe a weekly talk show. But I don't remember what, I don't know what it was like back then, especially for maybe your first encounter or encounters with Bob Knight. What were those early days like with him calling the shots in Indiana?
Well, my general manager basically, now the first thing I did, of course, at with IU was Indiana football. And Lee Corso, Lee Corso was in his first year as the head coach. So we both kind of came in as newbies, so to speak. And in that sense, I mean, but if you know who Lee Corso is, you know about him, you know what kind of personality he has. He's just a fun-loving guy in many respects, and a guy who his personality just immediately draws you in. And I got a chance to meet him, and I was so excited about doing games with him because he was such a friendly guy. And so I got to do the play-by-play of the football season. I didn't even meet Bob Knight until he spoke at the Columbia Club and on the Circle downtown Indianapolis for a tip-off luncheon that it was attended by about 600 people. And it was just to see him speak, and he was a very intimidating person, but he was a great speaker, and he kind of could draw you in with his the way he went about things and the way he talked. And he was a tough-talking guy. There's no question about that. And my general manager basically told me, when you meet Bob Knight, he says, you're going to meet a different kind of person, and you're going to have to deal with him because your job is going to be to get a pregame show interview with him before every ball game. That's going to be part of our pregame that you have to do, and you're going to have to get it from him, so you're going to have to develop a rapport. And whatever that takes, that's what it's going to take. So you better be ready to handle whatever situation he throws at you. So I got taken up there by my spotter, a guy named Don Luft. The color analyst for our football broadcast and basketball broadcast was hired by WIRE because the university wanted Max Skirvin, who was the previous play-by-play guy for the last 6 years at IU. He was my color guy for football and basketball. And he worked for the IU Alumni Association. And the university wanted him still to be put on the broadcast in some capacity because he had developed the name. And, of course, he traveled the state working alumni groups and things like that. And they thought that would be a great fit. Well, of course, he wasn't real happy about being replaced as the play-by-play guy.
Right.
But at any rate, I mean, we got along okay. It wasn't like he was being negative to me or anything like that. But he wasn't the most friendly guy in that sense at that time either. But nevertheless, those two guys, my spotter Don Luft, who was the president of the IU Varsity Club, and Max Skirvin and I, all drove up to the Columbia Club and went to the Bob Knight luncheon and saw him speak. And Luft was a friend of Knight's, so he said, I'm going to take you up after he's done speaking, he says, and we'll introduce you for the first time. And I said, great. I said, I got to meet the guy. So we get together after the thing's over with. We're waiting for Knight to get through glad handing with people and talking to other people that came up to him and that kind of thing. And finally, Knight's done with everybody else, and Don Luft and I and Max Skirvin are standing there. And so Don Luft says, Coach, come over here and meet the new play-by-play broadcaster for Indiana University football and basketball games. This is Don Fisher. I stuck out my hand. He did shake my hand, but he didn't say welcome or looking forward to working with you or anything. He didn't say a word. He just shook my hand for a second, looked at me, then turned to Max Skirvin, put his arm around Max, and walked off with him.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
It was pretty much telling me, Max was our guy for 6 years, and you're going to replace him, but it's not going to be an easy replacement. So at any rate, that's how it all got started with Coach Knight. I found out very quickly my place, which was not in front in any way, shape, or form. But you know what? You have to develop a relationship. And we were able to develop a good relationship through the 27 years that I worked with him. I would never call us like friendly friends, if you want to say. You know, we weren't like bosom buddies or anything like that. He was just a guy that did his job, wanted to do it to the best of his ability. He was a tough taskmaster type coach and a tough guy to deal with in many respects. But I earned his respect, and I was able to do pregame shows with him. And then we ended up doing talk shows from 1981 to his firing. So we did have a good relationship from a professional standpoint.
Imagine that encounter happening today, because I do know how a lot of things go. You put them on social media, or you just have them just be a conversation around the town. Somebody might say, "Oh, I met Bob Knight. Well, how was it?" And they describe exactly what you went through. Bob Knight might be looked at as a crazy man, someone that you don't want to be around, but that was who he was. That was his demeanor. And I'm glad that that did not derail you in your pursuit of the pregame shows and the talk shows that you guys did together, because that could have been a way for you to just be like, "Look, I don't want to work with this guy. I'll do my job, but I don't want to talk to the coach." But that didn't stop you from making that connection and doing what your boss really not asked you, but required of you.
Well, exactly. I mean, look, you're going to be if you're in this business, you're going to be put in different scenarios and with different people, and it's not going to be always a good, great, close relationship. They're going to be people that you work with. They may not like you for some reason. You may not like them for some reason, but you're forced to work together. And honestly, we were able to work it out. We really were. And granted, I did most of his bidding in the sense that we did the pregame shows like 3.5 hours before the games, that kind of thing. So I went to the team's walkthrough before a ball game and waited for him to get ready to do whatever we needed to do for the pregame show. And sometimes it took me an hour and a half wait to get him, that kind of thing. But it was because he was busy with what he was preparing to do for a ball game. And I would always get him, generally speaking, right after they ate, right after the team ate. And again, it worked out. And like I said, I respected that guy. I still think to this day that from a college basketball perspective, there's never been a better basketball coach at the college level than Bob Knight. Again, it was a different era. It was a different style. It wasn't somebody that everybody liked, and he was a tough guy to deal with at times. But he was a tremendous basketball coach, and I learned more basketball from him than I did from anybody else that I'd ever played for or ever talked to or ever was around. There was nobody, I thought, that was a better basketball mind than Bob Knight.
He is definitely one of the people that if you're in Indiana, or maybe just college basketball in general, you have an opinion on. You may not like him as a person. You may like him as a person. You're probably one way or the other, but it's really hard for people to go against and deny how good of a coach he was, how good of a basketball mind he was, and that his players genuinely loved playing for him. Now, you can say, Jay, that there are things that happened that are out on Front Street where he did things that were wrong. Well, everyone's done things that were wrong. We're people. Those things happen. But Bob Knight, the basketball coach, and the way that he conducted the program, and just, I mean, he won national championships, plural. Not every college basketball coach that's a good coach can say they've won multiple national basketball championships. So I'm glad you got that connection. But I'm in my early 30s. I enjoy the Bob Knight era of Indiana. And I know I keep talking about basketball. You also did football. You also do and have done football as well. So that kind of gets overlooked in that you do both, because basketball with Bob Knight was so polarizing.
It was. There's no question about that. And basketball, as everybody knows in this state, basketball is king, and it always has been, and it probably always will be. I think the Colts coming to Indianapolis has really elevated football in this state. It certainly elevated the high school ranks of football. The college game has taken on a different look and a different feel in the state of Indiana, but basketball will always be king here. It always has been, and I don't think anybody will ever overcome that. But I think the key here is I've had a chance to do both, and without question, we've had a lot more losing seasons in Indiana than we've had winning seasons. So the success level that basketball achieved wasn't even close to what football has been able to achieve, because they just have not been able to get it done on a consistent basis throughout. But it also teaches you something about how to be a play-by-play guy. It teaches you how to be objective. It teaches you how to deal with adversity. It teaches you that you can't always be looking at championship-type teams, and you're always going to have great games to broadcast, because you're not. It teaches you a lot about the real world of sportscasting. And honestly, I looked at it in that regard. I think it's been great to have the contrast of the team that wasn't so good and the team that's been absolutely phenomenal. So, and you get that through the years that you're there and all that kind of thing. And that's one of the reasons that I've enjoyed playing or being at Indiana for all these years, is because I've had such a variety of things to deal with.
Oh, yeah. We're going to close it out with this. You've won numerous awards in your broadcasting career, and I would love to have you back on later at a later date to discuss more things, more details about your career and some experiences that you've had. But you have won Indiana Sportscaster of the Year multiple times. I believe you're the 9-time winner. That's, to me, as great as Bob Knight was as a coach when it comes to broadcasting in this state and being a sportscaster, the play-by-play variety. You are looked at as one of the elite, and people look to you, not just for advice, but they can listen to you to try to follow your path and follow the things that make you who you are. Now, of course, everyone's going to be unique, but being able to say, or being the recipient of this award 9 times, that's a huge honor. Does it ever, or has it sunk in, or does it ever get, do you ever get like goosebumps or get nervous when thinking about, say nervous might not be the right word, when thinking about what you've done, what you've accomplished, and that you yourself, Don Fisher, have been able to do so much in this state behind the mic?
Well, Jay, I'm going to correct you a little bit, because and I feel sheepish in doing so, simply because I've won the Sportscaster of the Year award in this state from 2 different organizations 31 times.
How many times?
31.
Wow.
4 times for the Indiana Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association, and the other 27 times I've been named the Indiana Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports Media Association.
I don't know where I got 9 from.
It doesn't matter. And I'm only correcting you because I don't want you to come off sounding like you don't know what you're talking about, because you've asked good questions in here. but I've been very fortunate. And look, a lot of the reason that I won awards or have won awards back in the day was because I was the voice of IU. And IU was as big, if not bigger, than anything in the state basketball-wise, especially during the Bob Knight era. So I'm not sitting here tapping myself on the back and saying how great I am. I had just doing Indiana had as much to do with me and the exposure that I've had on a network that at one time numbered well over 60 radio stations in this state. And so I've had more exposure than any of the other play-by-play guys in this state as well. So I look at it from the perspective that I don't look at it like Don Fisher's great. I think Don Fisher's been a lucky dude to have this job for as long as he's had it.
Don Fisher, this has been a lot of fun, a whole lot of fun. I'm glad you can come on the podcast, and we can just discuss your career and some Bob Knight, some Lee Corso. I would love to have you back on to get some more Lee Corso and Bob Knight stories, and also Mike Davis and everything going on with the coaches and the things you have been entrenched in and been in the mix of for a very long time. Thank you, Don. Do you have any final final comments about either IU, your time there, broadcasting, anything that you would like to leave the people with?
Well, for a guy that never went to college and got out of high school and didn't do very well from an academic perspective, it just tells you that if you have motivation to be somebody, and some I say somebody in the sense of being good at something. That if you've got that motivation, all you have to do is prepare just like anybody else in any other job in this world. And if you're good at it, you've prepared your tail off. And that's the one thing I'd leave with anybody that's interested in broadcasting or really in any facet of their life. If you prepare for it and you prepare hard and you're motivated to be good at it, you will be.
Don Fisher, this has been a lot of fun. I look forward to hopefully having you back on the podcast either later, probably sometime next year as you're getting ready to embark on the football season a couple months away. But thanks for coming on the podcast, Don. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jay.
If we had more time with Don Fisher, I would have loved to dive into more of the Bob Knight stories. What were some of those early years like? What was it like calling the national championships that Bob Knight won? What was it like in the early 2000s during the Mike Davis era? Oh yeah, Kelvin Sampson. He was a pretty good coach. He did some things that weren't okay and he broke some NCAA rules. I would have loved to dive into all of those things on the basketball court. But in the football, that's a whole nother topic we could dive into as well. Not enough time to talk about everything today. I can't wait till we hopefully have Don Fisher back on the podcast sometime next year. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at jstevens07. You can also send all of your emails to jstevenspod@gmail.com. Remember to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a comment, a rating on Apple. It's greatly appreciated. It's also a free way to help more people learn about and know about and enjoy the Jay Stevens Podcast on a weekly basis, just like you. This has been episode 249 of the Jay Stevens Podcast. I will see you next time.